Welcome everybody to Unscripted Violence. It is myself, Stagger Lee, and producer Joe with you. I don't have that much in the way of news today.
It's been a real quiet week after last week with the whole Scott Hall news. This week's been pretty uneventful so far.
Yeah, so I'm taking that as a good thing myself. You know what they say, no news is good news.
Yes, sir.
Should we jump right into AEW Dynamite?
Yeah, let's get into it.
All right. Well, we started off immediately with a trios match. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish versus Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Adam Page. I honestly was not that excited for this match. I don't know the reason why. Maybe I'm just a little bit burned out of the Adam Cole, Hangman Page angle. After their match at Revolution, I just kind of feel like it's time for Adam to have a new opponent.
Yeah, I wasn't too crazy about this match going, but it was a hot way to start the show. And once it was the most I've enjoyed Hangman Page and Jurassic in a while. There was an early Jungle Boy slip up where he jumped on the ropes, and if he hadn't been so quick thinking, that could have been an injury for him.
I noticed that. Yeah, he caught himself pretty quick on that one. The match did turn out to be pretty amazing, actually. I liked their choreographed moves that they did, like the triple moonsaults. And then when there was a double doomsday device that they pulled off really nicely with Jungle Boy doing a double clothesline. And it ultimately ended up that Cole and Red Dragon triple teamed Jungle Boy, and Cole lowered the boom, as Excalibur calls it. I really don't like the name of that move. I don't know why, but they got the win.
Yeah, 13:58. It was, I thought it was a hot start to the show, you know, like, that's how you really wanted to kick off a show like this. And it was kind of refreshing after last week, because last week it felt like they jam-packed so much into a show that, like, I really enjoyed this start to it, at least.
Yeah, it was nice to have a bit more wrestling in the show than last week's was. I think we counted just a lot of promos last week. It was weird. It was almost like a setup for things to come.
Yeah, they had a lot of promos. A promo followed this that was funny that you bring it up, kind of a setup for later, because it's Keith Lee, Ricky Starks, and Powerhouse Hobbs backstage with Shivani. And it seemed like Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs, they had agreed to no violence, but it almost seemed like they were trying to intimidate Lee into, you know, because they're referring to Ram, their show. So that kind of plays off in another promo later, but I thought it was interesting how they were trying to put it to Lee here.
Yeah, it was. And Keith Lee ended up saying, "See you on Friday." So Ricky Starks was saying that Keith was up for another ass whooping. And yeah, like you said, that sets up later. Then we had a video package with Chris Statlander. She took out her contacts and her makeup and kind of taking a little bit more serious of a tone to herself.
But yeah, next, especially with the way that Layla Hirsch feud is going, it definitely, something's got to be done there, right?
Yeah, definitely. And then after this, we had Brian Danielson with John Moxley teaming together for the first time. against Wheeler Yuta and Chuck Taylor. And William Regal was on commentary, which I really liked. I enjoyed him on commentary for this.
Yeah, I really like this whole package they've put together with Danielson, Moxley, and Regal.
Yeah, it's perfect. And the Mox Danielson team is looking really good. Wheeler and Chuck, that's not to take away from them. They put on an excellent match, and especially this was like Wheeler Yuta's time to shine, and he really did during this match.
Yeah, I thought both him and Chuck really showed out well here.
They both did, yeah. It's just the fact that on commentary, Regal was kind of building it up more towards Wheeler Yuta. But in the end, Brian ends up kicking in Wheeler Yuta's head in his usual fashion, and then tags in Mox, and Mox applying that bulldog choke for the submission in that for the win. William Regal then walks to the ring, and he shakes Mox's and Danielson's hands, and Yuta steps into the ring and offers a handshake to Regal, and Regal, just stiff as fuck, just slaps the shit out of him. Which should we take that as a sign of approval from him at this point?
That looks like the way he seems to be initiating people into his group. And I mean, he said it when he did it to Danielson that he wanted him to slap him back or hit him in the mouth. So it sounds like this is just going to be a very, I want to say, violent faction. And I mean, when your faction is acting like that, I'm excited to see who they bring in next week. And like, what will Yuta do? Did he join?
Yeah, I'm excited to see where they continue with Yuta on that. I think he would be a great great protege for them to kind of take under his wing, or under their wing, not his, but under Brian and John's and William's wings, and really show him the ropes and get involved with his character a little bit more. I'd be interested to see where that would all be going. And like you said, it seems like a more violent faction, a more serious faction, and it's something AEW could use right now.
Definitely.
Then we had Tony backstage with FTR, and Tony asks about them firing Tully Blanchard, and they say that basically Tully lost focus. Then they're interrupted by the Young Bucks, and they say that FTR is the second best tag team in AEW, and they pretty much leave it at that. So setting up a little animosity between the two teams there. We are also backstage with the acclaimed Max Caster talking about his match on Rampage this Friday when Starks and Hobbs interrupt. And Starks is saying how they got to stop the new guy from taking their spot. Then Swerve walks in, and he talks about how he's going to be the main event on Rampage. And I don't know that much about Swerve. A lot of people seem to have nothing but positive things to say about him. What do you know about Swerve?
He was huge on the independents before he got to NXT. When MLW brought back the promotion a few years ago, he was their first champion. He was big. He was huge on the indies. And at least the people that I talked to were very excited when he went to NXT originally. And I mean, we saw how it all played out there. And I think a lot of the people that I know are very excited for this run. And I mean, they did a lot in this promo. You still had Hobbs and Starks kind of leaning on Keith Lee to beat the guy from the Acclaimed, to kind of show that Friday is their night. And then as they're doing that, Swerve kind of walks in and is declaring Friday's his night. So it's interesting we got these two guys fighting for, or these kind of two factions fighting for whose night is this. And it's making Rampage feel special, I think.
Yeah, it's sort of like a bragging rights type of feud that they're setting up. It's interesting, yeah. And yeah, definitely Rampage needs its players on there.
Yeah, because initially Hook was the kind of the big marquee guy that they had on Fridays. And now, like, if you have Swerve on there too, that's very interesting.
Definitely. Then we have Jericho's music hitting, and looks like he's got a new video to go along with the music. He's joined by 2.0, Daniel Garcia, and Jake Hager. Matt Lee tells everybody that they have Jericho to thank for the sing-along, and if he had it his way, there would be no Judas, there would be no sing-along. But that's what makes Jericho a better man than he is, and that Jericho should be praised. Jericho gets on the mic brags about how he helped build companies like AEW and how nobody appreciates him. He goes on to say he's not a pro wrestler, that he's a sports entertainer, which got a ton of heat, rightly so. And I thought that was a brilliant turn to everything.
It shows that they understand their fan base and what gets them worked up.
Definitely. He even went further, and Garcia interrupts him and kind of acts disturbed, and he says, well, if you're a sports entertainer, then I guess I'm a sports entertainer too, and goes on to say, I'm Daniel Garcia and I'm a sports entertainer, continuing to get heat from that.
I didn't even read it as Daniel Garcia is being disturbed. It just seemed like he was stepping up and accepting the mantle that Jericho was giving them. I thought Daniel Garcia saying that was one of the... I want to see how I put it. Oh, in my notes, I just put Daniel Garcia declaring himself a sports entertainer, comma, sad. Because I... so disappointed by that. But I mean, you gotta build them up the way you're building them up, so it's whatever. But
it was to get the heat more than anything,
and I mean, it got me upset, so it did its job.
Yeah, it succeeded. Jericho also went a bit further and said that Matt Lee and Parker's names were stupid names that were handed down by bad creative. And then he goes to introduce him as Matt Menard and Angelo Parker, obviously worse names than what he mentioned. And this I took as kind of a rib to WWE types and their creative, which I thought was a kind of a brilliant take by Jericho. He then hands the mic to Hager, and Hager says that they're called JAS and that they beat up pro wrestlers. And Jericho says it's the end of it's the era, sorry, of the sports entertainer. So that looks like what they're going with on that. I thought it was pretty brilliant of Jericho to put it the way he did and do things the way he did. And like you said, it just shows that they know the fan base and what's going to get us hot. And so I consider that very successful. And I'm interested to see what the faction does.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah, and then we had a sort of a video package with Serena Deeb cutting a promo on Sheeta, which I think Serena Deeb just looks better and better in these promos every week. She seems to be in her element with them, and the way they put them together, I'm really enjoying. And I'm actually looking forward to the next chapter in this Serena Deeb Sheeta saga to see how that match is going to go. All their matches have been really great thus far, so I can't see being disappointed in it. Then we have a TNT Championship match. It's Wardlow versus Scorpio Sky. For some reason, Dan Lambert's wearing the interim belt, and I still don't understand why they have that belt. It perplexes me.
But yeah, still...
I'm sorry.
It just feels like, you know, since they have it, they might as well make use of it. I don't really understand it either, but it's something, I guess.
Yeah, it's something for to get Lambert over as more of a heel, I guess. He's just good at the way he just being himself, being the heel that way. I don't think he needs the belt to rub it in everybody's face. But like you said, it's whatever on that point.
I mean, I feel like they're just trying to make Scorpio Sky a better heel. Like, I've noticed it in his promo, he came along in the way he's sounding, but if you have Lambert and these other people in there, it just helps build him up.
Yeah. During this match, Wardlow he looks very strong, doing a belly-to-back overhead suplexes, which I found impressive. Just these, like, huge released Germans, and those looked incredible. He got an eye-to-eye confrontation with one of America Top Team members. I forget his name.
I believe it's Austin Vanderford. I think I had it written down as.
There you go. Yeah, he got to eye-to-eye confrontation with him. Then he decides to make out with Paige VanZant for some reason, and that's supposed to intimidate Wardlow. I didn't understand it, but that was what it was. Then they went to a picture-in-picture, so I kind of tuned out on that part of the match, which I should have paid more attention to because Wardlow was starting to sell being hurt a bit, and Sky seemed to have a bit more of an advantage after the commercials. Then Wardlow just hit a huge choke slam powerbomb combo and starts with his symphony of powerbombs onto Scorpio. He hits about 3 powerbombs before Dan Lambert hops on the ring apron and distracts the referee, also distracting Wardlow in the process. And then Wardlow then rolls out of the ring, and Sean Spears is shown coming down the ramp with 2 chairs. Wardlow makes his way back into the ring, or around the ring, sorry. And from the camera angle, it just looks like MJF pops up right behind him, and he shoves him into the ring post and rolls Wardlow into the ring. Scorpio then after being hit with the diamond ring by MJF, then gets thrown back in the ring. Scorpio rolls him up for the win. The Austin Vanderford jumps on top of Wardlow and starts beating on him. MJF walks into the ring just laughing. Spears comes in with the chair, and Wardlow manages to knock down everybody in the ring, turns to MJF, MJF tries to run from Wardlow by ducking out of the ring. Wardlow catches him. He gets ready to powerbomb him, and then he gets hit from behind by Spears with the chair. And then everybody just seems to attack Wardlow. Commentary does make a point that Wardlow is out there all alone and has nobody to back him up. Spears then hits Wardlow with a chair shot to the head that just had Wardlow not had his hands up. That looked really nasty. Spears just knows how to deliver those chair shots. And MJF then gives Dan Lambert some money, just paying him off for the help. And MJF waits for Wardlow to stand up and once again hits him with the diamond ring. I can't say that I'm surprised at the outcome of this. I knew that MJF was going to interfere with Wardlow's shot at the title. I just didn't know how it would be done.
Yeah, you knew there was going to be some kind of revenge coming off the pay-per-view, and this seems to be it. And I mean, this will play forward, I'm sure, kind of advancing their rivalry.
Yeah, definitely. We go backstage with Jade Cargill and Smart Mark Sterling, and basically they're asking who's next for Jade, and they're calling her kiss the kiss of doom, which I don't know if I like that name. You would think
hopefully they work on it.
Yeah, you would think kiss of death, but there's probably a reason why they're not using that. Hopefully they work some a little better out than that. We have Private Party versus the Hardys, which I was excited to see, and so were the fans. There was a huge pop. I thought they looked great together, and Private Party is doing a great job at being the heels in this match. It looked like Jeff at one point in the match was going for the senton, and then instead of that he hit a big splash instead. I don't know what the reasoning was for that, but
I think that the commentators said that he might have been too close for the big swanton.
Oh, that's right. They did mention something about that. Yeah, that's probably what happened. So they were just rearranging for the spot. But eventually, they hit all their signature moves. Jeff hits the Swanton from the top for the win. Before their music's done playing out, Andrade's music comes on. And out comes on Andrade. He's got the Butcher Blade. Bunny is with them. They're all surrounding the ring, and it looks like they're going to gang up on the Hardys. We then hear Darby Allin's music hit, and out comes Darby and Sting with a skateboard and a baseball bat in hand, and they clear out the ring. Then we went over an overview on the upcoming Rampage card, which includes Red Velvet cutting a promo on Layla Hirsch and her upcoming match in that. I didn't write down all the matches on this, so I apologize for that, but we will be covering it anyway. So The next match was our main event. It was the Women's World Championship in a steel cage match. Is Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker. And Thunder came out with a huge entrance with a mariachi band playing her out, and then her music hitting after the mariachi band. And her Rosa's entire face was painted, and she's got on her tights a 316 on the back of them. I wonder if that's some kind of tribute to Stone Cold.
Well, it was also March 16th that day as well, so I think it was.
Oh, that makes sense.
It was both kind of a Stone Cold tribute and maybe special tights for the day, you know, of her bringing in the championship, because they really did up a big entrance in, you know, kind of celebration of her.
Yeah, and it's her hometown and everything, and she got the right kind of pop for it. Britt had Scott Hall inspired gear, which I thought was really cool, and done in the black and white. Thunder was wrestling in the cage excellently. I don't know if previously in her career she's had a cage match, but
I feel like she must have. I was surprised to learn this was the first women's cage match in AEW.
Oh yeah, it was, and that's why I was like, well, I know I haven't seen her in a cage match on AEW. I was trying to scan in my head if I've ever seen her in a cage match, because she just took to it so well, and her the movement she was making and the moves that she was doing in the ring and using the cage to her advantage, it just really looked brilliantly done to me. Not to take anything away from Britt. Britt looked amazing as always too. But we had both ladies ended up getting opened up. Britt at one point piles steel chair after steel chair in the corner, and does avalanche air raid crash onto the chairs with Rosa, and I thought, wow, this could really be the end of the match. But the ref had that was knocked out at that point, and she had ended up calling to the back for another ref. Out comes our favorite Aubrey Edwards into the cage to finish off the officiating. She obviously did not get the pinfall on that. Instead, Britt would continue with the chairs, and she stood up four chairs facing each other in the corner, and then ended up unfolding them and stacking on all the chairs on top of each other. Those to the top rope where, after an exchange of punches, she ends up landing on the chairs herself. It didn't end there. Britt recovers from that. She also introduces thumbtacks into the ring. Backdrops Rosa onto the tacks. Then tries for the lockjaw. Thunder combats this by biting her hand. Britt tries for the lockjaw on the opposite hand. And what I thought was awesome use of the tacks was Thunder started beating Britt's hand and arm into the thumbtacks, which was pretty original. I haven't seen that done before as a counter. But it ended up with a fiery Thunder driver into the thumbtacks by Rosa for the win. And we closed out the match with a big celebration, and the show ended with Dustin Rhodes coming in and congratulating Rosa on the victory. I think we were all waiting a long time to see Rosa in this position.
Yeah, I mean, Britt Baker had a really good title run, but Rosa's been on the cusp of it since leaving the NWA and coming here. And it was a year ago she had the big lights out match where she got the win over Britt. So this just almost felt long overdue.
Yeah, it did. And I'm, you know, a big congratulations to her on such a big accomplishment. Being in the first cage match in AEW and winning the title, it doesn't get any better than that to end a Dynamite. I thought Dynamite was a I'd say 3.75 chair shot show.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, I'm gonna call it 4 only because I thought it felt like it breezed by a lot quicker than last week. You had a very good Hardy Boys match dressed in, they came out in like classic Hardy Boys gear, so I enjoyed that. What else was good on this show? Oh, the Moxley match and the interaction with Yuta. So that all combined with it feeling shorter was why I gave it a 4.
Awesome. My wrestler of the night was Thunder Rosa, naturally. And I don't need to mention why, because I just went over all those reasons.
Yeah, I want to give it to somebody else. Like, I want to give it to Yuta for standing out and, like, finally breaking away. Even Chuck Taylor, he's become more of a comedy wrestler, but I thought he showed out well in his match. But the big story is Rosa. You got to give it to her.
Yeah, definitely. Next, what we're doing, this a little bit different since we had the time rearrangement in the past couple of weeks. We're covering this past Rampage rather than the week before. It would seem to flow a little bit better that way. And you guys can feel free to tell me if you like it the other way. You know, we of course could do it the way we have been, but we're just trying something different. And Rampage started off with Darby Allin with Sting versus the Butcher, and Bunny and Blade was out with them. I thought this was a great match between the two, and it really played off on the size difference, which is the obvious thing, but with the Butcher using his size to his advantage in this match, he just was doing some moves onto Darby that Darby made look like it was breaking him in half, honestly.
Yeah, the Butcher looked like a monster in the ring.
He did. There was a coffin drop by Darby onto the Butcher on the outside, and Darby got the win via countout, which I thought was, I was pleasantly surprised by this finish.
Yeah, that coffin drop from the top rope to the floor looked wild, and I think they sold it well where the Butcher didn't recover from it, and even Darby barely beat the count back in.
Yeah, I thought it was a great end. But then we hear Andrade's music hit, and it kind of distracts Sting and Darby while Private Party and the Blade jump them from behind. Shortly after that, the Hardy's music hits, and they end up clearing the ring, sort of returning the favor. Matt gets on the mic, and he urges the AFO to come inside the ring now that the numbers are a bit more even. AFO gets on the ring end, the apron, and in typical heel fashion, they jump back down. And then Matt issues a challenge on Dynamite to an 8-man Texas Tornado match between Private Party, Butcher, and the Blade, and the Hardys, with Sting and Darby Allin. And I'll be looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that'll be a very good one this week.
definitely. We go backstage with Paige Van Zandt, Scorpio Sky, and Dan Lambert. Not much was really said than promoting themselves. Paige promoting herself a little bit. It's the, if I'm not mistaken, that's the first time we've heard her talk.
It is, and what I wrote down about this was it was a good heel promo from Sky. It's probably the best he sounded. I'm sure it doesn't help being with Lambert. And I wrote that Paige has to learn to talk sometime. And I mean, where else are you going to learn but TV? She definitely sounded the less experienced of the group, though.
Yeah, it was a little rough, and you could tell that it was her first time. She's got nowhere to go but up from there, and just working on that. But we had the next match was legit Layla Hirsch versus Red Velvet. This one started before the bell rang on the ramp. Velvet immediately runs up and suplexes Layla on the ramp, which sort of set the tone. Then the match went back into the ring, and Hirsch looked really good most of this match. I just naturally was drawn more to Hirsch in this match than I was to Red Velvet for some reason. But Layla tried to reach under the ring and grab a piece of turnbuckle. And as she was trying to introduce that into the match, Statlander came up outside the ring and grabbed a hold of it and was tempted to pull that away. And in the distraction of that, Red Velvet hit a corkscrew kick onto Hirsch and ended up gaining the win out of that match. I just really can't wait to see Layla versus Chris Statlander next, because that's what I've been waiting for.
Yeah, it's going to be a good match. I mean, the only note I had on this was Red Velvet was coming off as quite vicious in her attacks, which would make sense since everybody feels by this perceived change in Layla Hirsch that they see.
Definitely, she did seem a little bit more amped up than usual. Next, we had a taped package of QT Marshall and Hook, and how next week he is going to, Marshall's going to give his certificate of accomplishment. And I don't know quite what that means. I guess we'll find out. Whenever QT is involved, it just takes it down a notch for me.
Yeah, he's not the most compelling character. I mean, some weeks he's entertaining, some weeks a little less so.
Yeah. But next we had a match with the House of Black, comprising of Brody King, Buddy Matthews, and Malachi Black. They were against Bear Country and Fuego del Sol. I didn't really have much to say about this match. It was really quick. Ended up with Buddy Matthews pinning Fuego for the win. Really nothing that significant to me on that match, other than the full House of Black being in there and showcasing their skills. Then backstage, we are with Penta Oscuro. I hope I'm saying that right. I'm very bad with my Spanish pronunciation. And he's with Alex, and they have their Dark Macabre gear on. What do you think of this change to Penta and Alex as characters?
I've enjoyed it. It kind of harkens back to the Pentagon Dark character from Lucha Underground. And I really enjoyed what he did there. So seeing the all black gear is kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's a cool direction too. And they were just talking how Alex was translating saying Penta was saying he feels strongest and most alive in the darkness, and that the death triangle is inevitable. And then I'm going to sort of lean on you for this next match, because my DVR was not on point with the show, probably due to the basketball game being beforehand. And it came to Keith Lee versus Max Caster. It just started in the promos, and then my DVR went out.
I did not watch this match. I was only able to make it up to Layla Hirsch and Red Velvet this morning.
All right, so I apologize to everybody about that, but that's one of the wonders of our technology. I'll have to double check the basketball schedules next time with my DVR and make sure it's programmed right. But Rampage, for the most part, it was pretty standard. The best part of it to me was Darby Allin Butcher match. So from what I saw, I'd give it 3.5 chair shots.
I can't even really rate it because I didn't see enough of it. I will say that my match of the night was Layla Hirsch and Red Velvet, just because I thought we saw more out of Red Velvet in this match than we normally do.
All right, that's a very good point. So, once again, I apologize for that last match. I really wanted to see Keith Lee too. And I couldn't even find highlights on this for some reason. Everywhere I was looking, it was either someone else reviewing it or something other than the footage I was looking for. So it'll remind me to be more prepared when March Madness hits in the future.
Luckily, it's one of those things that only hits once a year. And given the new kind of sports schedules seem to be fluid, and it seems like different networks are getting different coverage. So it's one of those things that, you know, it's kind of, where will the tournament show up this year? I'm surprised it's interrupting wrestling. Usually nothing seems to interrupt wrestling.
Yeah,
dog show.
Yeah, I nothing really does seem to interrupt, which is why I wasn't expecting this to happen on my DVR. But it happens, and next week I'm sure we'll have the full Rampage for everybody. I'd like to thank all you listeners, though, for your support.
Well, how about this? For our next episode, we'll cover Dynamite, and then we'll go back and we'll try and find that main event from Rampage and watch it.
That sounds good. I am down for that, because it probably is by today. There should be some footage of that somewhere. I don't see a reason why it wouldn't be anywhere that I couldn't find it. So we will cover that. That sounds great. Good plan.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening and for your support and for the ratings and likes. Keep them coming. We will not discourage that in one iota. You're what keeps this show going, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, listen to us wherever you can. Share it, like it, rate, review, tell a friend to do the same if you can.
Definitely. And until next time, this is Unscripted Violence. This is Stagger Lee and producer Joe, and we're signing off for the week, and we'll see you next time.
Have a good one.